an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Ron King, co-founder of Oscar's Place, which collectively refers to two facilities that rescue, rehabilitate, and rehome donkeys. There's a ranch in Hopland, California, and a sanctuary in nearby Potter Valley. Founded just over a hair over 5 years ago, the Oscar's Place operation continues to expand. More on that in a moment. The measure of the high-octane Dynamo King has been since long before the donkeys entered his world. Indeed, King's background involves working as a swashbuckling media magazine hotshot, running InStyle magazine, jetting to Italian fashion shows, living a big, glossy life. But then, through a confluence of factors that whole fabulous scenario unraveled. Sitting amidst the smoldering wreckage of his former life, unclear what to do next, King saw a TikTok about the donkey trade that commanded his attention. It revealed that up to 5 million donkeys are slaughtered every year, chiefly for their hides. Relatively short order, King launched Oscar's Place. So for those scoring at home, what we have here is a legacy media luminary in the realm of magazines, initially galvanized into donkey rescuing action by a TikTok. Applying the ambition, drive, and talent he reflected in his previous career, King has helped rescue the better part of 500 donkeys and rehome 200 of them. Further by the numbers, about 160 donkeys are now living at the Hopland Ranch, while 60 more reside at the other location. And to better serve the Oscar's Place mission, King is now building in North Texas the first donkey hospital in the U.S. There's also a reality TV series called Donkey King, so plenty to discuss with Ron King about donkeys, TV shows, hospitals, more donkeys, projects, etc. I'm going to speak with him in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later on today's program, I'll speak with Rachel Lee Holstein, campaign logistics organizer for PETA. We'll speak about the Loomis Brothers Circus in Oka, their elderly and long mistreated elephant. We discussed Loomis Brothers Circus in Oka about a month ago when the circus was in Sarasota amidst structured protests. And today, Loomis Brothers Circus concludes a stand in Tampa at the Florida State Fairground. So hear more about Loomis Brothers in Oka when Rachel Lee Holstein joins us later in today's program. Right now, though, let's get into my conversation with Ron King about Oscar's Place donkeys and his ongoing efforts to rescue them. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Ron King to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. First of all, let's acknowledge two things right off the bat. We've got donkeys actually in the interview. So that who do we got there?
That's right. So it's hard to focus when you've got this going on, but this little boy.
Same here. I'm already totally distracted. I've already lost my total train of thought.
That's right. This little boy is named Sherlock. He was born on Friday morning, so he's 5 days old.
Wow. And I thought he looked tiny. Mom, I didn't Maisie. Realize he was that. So it's Sherlock, as in Sherlock Holmes?
That's him.
Okay, cool. 5 days old? Wow.
5 days old. He's doing really great. He's very feisty. Hi, buddy.
Hi. Too bad he's not cute, though. That's a shame.
Exactly. Yeah. This is his media debut, so he's getting famous early. He was born with, I'm not a doctor, so I don't really know this, but basically his hoof was growing the wrong direction. Our vet spotted it just within hours of being born and got him in a brace that straightened him out. And 5 days in, he's doing great. He's got a long life ahead of him. And, you know, we'll talk about this in great detail, but like this donkey will never experience fear or abuse of any sort. So he was born at Oscar's Place, and he's got a 40-year life ahead of him.
So does that mean because of his hoof condition, Ron, sorry to interrupt, but does that mean of his hoof condition that he's a longtime resident already earmarked to be that, or not necessarily?
No. According to my vet, what she caught early and fixed early will not be a problem for him moving forward. So
it'll just be like any other donkey that's living there now, but eventually maybe adopted out.
Yeah, that's right. With his mom, we never, ever separate families, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more also.
For sure. Cool. And beyond the fact that we've got Sherlock in the background, I also want to say that I believe, Ron, you may be the first person, at least that I've seen, actually dance to the Talking Animals theme. So I was impressed by that as well.
It's a catchy tune. I enjoyed it. We need to record a donkey bray and get that mixed in. Cool. So that's the only note that I will give you, but we'll figure that out.
We'll happily do that. And again, a lot of people find it catchy, but I think you're, like I say, you're the first person that was actually dancing to it. So that gives you a special place right there. So there's
depending upon how this time together goes, I have a table I may be dancing on later as well. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Yeah. Things are going to get really crazy here. I should point out, it's like 8 in the morning your time, right? So
it is very early here.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing that to get us able to talk live here. So in case people want to call in some questions or comments or whatever along the way. So there's just so much to discuss, much of which adheres to a central theme, at least that I've concocted, which is reinvented lives, namely yours and the donkeys, including Sherlock now and others. But let's initially look at things well before the Oscars play story kicks in. So I'm preparing to speak with you, reviewing the Ron King dossier. I read that you said you previously weren't an animal guy, and I've also read that you long had a soft spot for animals. So which would you say is closer to the mark?
Oh, that's really funny. I think it depends upon who's writing about me. I wasn't an animal guy before. Now, that doesn't mean I disliked animals. It just means that my social media algorithms were not one of cute animal videos and photos. They were more about scare prank videos and other things. So I didn't dislike animals, but animals were not forefront in my mind, and animals were not a place that I went for joy, for sure.
Were there animals in your house at all when you grew up as a kid? Were animals around? Or?
Yeah, I mean, my grandparents in Arkansas were farmers, so I've been around livestock. And then growing up, we had a dog. But yeah, they were always secondary to me. And of course, now they're primary. But yeah, I wasn't really an animal guy. That's just how it is.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting. After doing this show for so many years, a lot of times I speak to people who started a sanctuary or a rescue operation or whatever, and they were never allowed, in many cases, to have an animal at all. And then some, of course, had tons of animals around when they're growing up, but it seems like it's one extreme or the other. Almost never is it in between. So let's get into a key part of your narrative, which notes that you were an accomplished media executive with all the perks before you shifted gears toward donkey rescue. Before we delve into that transition from that, let's talk a little bit about the path you traveled to become a media mogul. So were you pursuing a fascination at the time with magazines or with fashion or with both? Was there some other element in it that drew you?
Much like most of my life, I just stumbled and tripped into things. So I wasn't very intentional. In my early 30s, was looking for a change I worked at an ad agency. And I got a job at Southern Living magazine in Atlanta, Georgia. And Southern Living is an amazing brand. And I kind of found my home in that. And I started in ad sales. And very quickly over the next couple of years, accelerated through Southern Living and ended up running Southern Living as publisher. And magazines were experiencing some tough times. Southern Living, like many other magazines, were in decline. And through the work of a great team, I was able to turn around that revenue decline and make it a very successful brand. And when Time Inc. saw that I did that, they gave me 7 other magazines and said, now go do this with these magazines. And those magazines included Multicultural, so Essence, the Essence Music Festival, and People in Espanol, and Fashion, which included In Style magazine and People Style Watch, as well as Southern Living, Coastal Living, and Sunset. So I had 7 magazines in my portfolio.
That's a big portfolio, I think, by any standard, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you end up in the South when this whole path began? I was thinking when I was listening to you, I detected what I thought was sort of a particular cadence when you talk, which may suggest a specific region, but I'm not smart enough to figure out which region that is.
Yeah, and much like these donkeys that are chewing on my pants at the moment, I'm a little bit of a mutt. So I definitely was raised in parts of the South. My father was a preacher, and I lived all over the country. So I think my cadence or my accent is a mixed match and also very dependent on how tired I am. So
I see.
Nothing in particular.
Gotcha. Okay. So what was the best part of that job when that huge portfolio was in full swing and you were obviously swamped and traveling around and doing all kinds of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I felt very grateful to have the job. I'm a very hard worker. I surround myself by great people. So I had an amazing team, both above me, beside me, and below me, supporting me. And so the team was great. The brands were great. I mean, Southern Living and InStyle, these are some of the best and biggest brands in publishing. And then the life was very glamorous. I mean, I didn't grow up with this type of a life. And so the idea of flying first class to Milan and being ushered in to meet Donatella Versace and being one of the first people she comes over to thank for attending for a fashion show, like all of that felt like make-believe for me. And I pretty much loved every minute of it. I mean, I had a sordid past. And, you know, at the age of 26, I was a homeless drug addict. And so I feel like everything I do is on borrowed time. And I'm really focused on being present and enjoying it. And so just like, you know, doing this interview right now with a new mother and her baby, I felt the same when I was at Versace fashion shows in Italy, that like, this is all a gift. And I really enjoyed it.
And by the way, we met Sherlock, but we didn't meet Mom.
This is Mom Maisie. She was rescued in October from the Bowie Livestock Auction in Bowie, Texas. She was destined for slaughter, and we outbid the kill pen buyers who were buying to sell to the slaughterhouse. We outbid them, and we got her and brought her here. Donkeys are pregnant for 14 months, and so it's one of the longer gestation periods. I'm just going to get Sherlock nursing. Oh, she didn't want him nursing on camera. And so she was pregnant, obviously, long before she got here. But she is, I mean, we can talk quite a bit about how amazing donkeys are. But she is aware that she's been rescued. She's very trusting of us. And she's beautiful, as you can see.
Yeah, lovely. As is her baby, of course, Sherlock. So, well, there seems to be various versions tracking your transition from that whole glorious magazine empire time to becoming a donkey maven, from media maven really to donkey maven, I guess. So
yeah.
I imagine I may have summarized it incorrectly myself, because it seems like I've seen so many slight variations of it. So I'm pretty sure the TikTok was pivotal, but walk me through that transition from running all those magazines and jet setting around and doing all that stuff to becoming the donkey maven that you are today.
Yeah, so a number of things all happened at the exact same time. I left Time Inc., and I thought it would be very easy for me to find a job, because I thought I was very good at what I did, and I had a very hard time finding a job. A big part of that was because I was known as a magazine guy, and magazines were dying. Another part of that is that I had aged out. So at the time, I was 50, and no one's trying to hire a 50-year-old executive. So I had aged out of a career and I was struggling with that. Then COVID happened. So I was having a bit of a midlife crisis. I was having a bit of a career crisis. And then my best friend had been asking me for a long time to find things that bring me joy. And I kind of thought that was annoying, because we're going to get pooped on camera. That's amazing.
Wow.
We're
getting the full experience here.
I was like, I'm very joyful. I drive a Mercedes AMG. And I fly first class everywhere I go, and Donatella Versace knows me by my first name. Like, why are you telling me to find joy? And of course, I didn't realize how stupid that statement was. And what I realized is that there's a difference between things that I enjoy and things that bring me joy. And I was 51 when I had that realization. I was like, oh, well, then I've been working really hard to fill my life with things that I enjoy, but not filling my life with joy. And so what does joy mean for me? And when I looked back at my life and thought, when have I experienced joy? Every time I had experienced joy that I could identify, I was having an impact. And that's when I realized, oh, for me, joy and impact go hand in hand. But, and there's an NPR tie in here, but I'm a little bit tired of helping people. not the biggest fan of humans. I have helped quite a few humans, and that never goes the way you want it to. And so I was like, okay, so I need to have an impact, but I'm tired of humans. And so I was scrolling TikTok. I saw this random video about donkeys at a slaughter auction in Texas. And I was like, why are people slaughtering donkeys? And so I Googled, and I read an article in The Guardian, and I read an article on NPR, both about the Yizhou skin trade. And what struck me was that there are thousands of horse rescues, and there are billion-dollar industries between horses, behind horses and cattle and goats and sheep. And that donkeys, because they have no monetary value to humans, were sort of an overlooked species. And that spoke to me. And I was like, well, donkeys are being slaughtered. Doesn't seem like a lot of people. There are some people helping donkeys. Don't want to take away from that, but not a lot of them. Doesn't seem like a lot of people are being donkey heroes. I want to have an impact. And I know somebody who has a big piece of property that they want to go toward animals. So I put all that together literally over the course of 3 or 4 days. I wrote a business plan. I had never met a donkey. So I got funding to launch, got an agreement on the property, and realized I'd never met a donkey. And so I was like, well, shoot, what if I don't like them? Or what if they don't like me?
You're pretty far into it at that point, too.
That's right. Yeah. So then I got three, Goose, Pickles, and Shadow. I fell madly in love. They still live here. And now, you know, as you said in the opening, almost 500 donkeys in, I have a completely different life. So it really was a TikTok video and some NPR research.
Yeah.
And serendipity and a search for joy. And I will tell you, as a result of all of that, I've never felt more joy in my life than I do today. And that is a gift that gets me choked up every time I say it out loud. I feel so lucky to have found a new chapter in my 50s, and that chapter is one that brings me joy. I've also never worked harder. I've never been more tired. My body's never been more beat up. I mean, it is not easy, but it is joyful.
And it sounds like you've landed on the correct side of the joy and joy.
That's right. That's right.
Side of things, yeah.
That's right.
That's really cool. So, you know, just a couple quick things about your summary there. I mean, we've all seen TikToks and clips on Instagram and elsewhere illustrating animals in trouble and some upsetting plight. Why did this get to you, do you think? And again, we already established that you weren't an animal guy, so you didn't have kind of a tendency in that way or a vulnerability that way. So why do you think that particular TikTok spoke to you at that moment?
I think it's because my TikTok algorithm is not one that highlights animals. So I'm normally looking, I like to watch the Bushman jump out on sidewalks and scare people. I like to see people get scared. That really entertains me. And so an animal video just stuck out to me. I was like, why am I looking at an animal video? And what's the difference between a horse and a donkey? Like, I didn't know anything. So I think that the fact that it was outside of my normal algorithm stream is what caught my attention. And then, you know, serendipity is such a powerful thing. I just happened to be in the right frame of mind to think, to notice it, and then to think, let me look into this deeper. And a big part of that was that I was in such a bad place. And, you know, one of my messages, while my primary message is about these amazing donkeys, one of my messages to humans is that when you're in a bad place, sometimes you need to just get out of the way and loosen your grip. Like, I was convinced that I was going to run another media organization. And I had gotten beaten up by life enough to think, all right, well, maybe I don't know what's next.
And so you were more open to possibilities at that moment, given what you had traveled.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's a more graceful way to say what I was trying to say.
Well, I'm only inspired by Sherlock and his mom.
And he's got the zoomies right now. He just had breakfast, and I think he just pooped, so he feels really good about himself.
Well, I think he likes to be on the air.
Yeah, they're definitely not camera shy, are they?
Yeah. Well, let me let folks know, maybe you have tuned in a bit late. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Ron King, co-founder of Oscar's Place. Full name is Oscar's Place Adoption Center and Sanctuary, which rescues, rehabilitates, and rehomes donkeys. In the annals of reinvented lives, King is a doozy. Previously, he was a swashbuckling media mogul, as he used to explain, running various magazines, jetting to fashion shows in Italy and elsewhere, living a big, glossy life. But then through a confluence of factors, including seeing a TikTok that we just discussed about the nefarious donkey trade, he became devoted to donkeys and launched Oscar's Place, which has rescued nearly 500 donkeys. If you'd like to ask Ron a donkey question or offer a donkey comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So I'm going to, based on the guests that you have there with you, I hope they'll say something. I'm looking forward to some braying because, again, a show called Talking Animals almost insists that the animals talk at some point. But one thing I was going to ask about later, but I'm going to ask about now just because it just seems like it fits in. At the beginning of each episode of the TV show, which we'll come back and talk a bit more detail about, you call donkeys the best creatures on earth. So how so? I already love donkeys, but if I didn't, how would you persuade me they're the best creatures on earth in three or four sentences?
So what's best is their emotional capacity. So donkeys are more dog-like than horse-like. And that's it. So there's science behind it. The part of the brain that processes emotion is called the limbic system. And a donkey's limbic system and a human's are about the same size. So donkeys are extremely emotional creatures, as you can see. I mean, this is a rescued 550-pound animal, just curious about what I'm doing, expressing love, relaxed lower lip, totally letting me do whatever I want to her baby. I mean, they are emotional. They form relationships with humans and with each other. I believe one of the things that made me so lucky, Dave's, is that I stumbled into a species that is fully capable of saying thank you. And she's doing it right now. I mean, this animal has only been in my care since October. And this behavior that you're witnessing is her, like, hanging out with the guy who saved her. And I feel gratitude and love from her.
So she's coming over to nuzzle you, but by way of saying, thank you, Ron.
That's how I take it. I think I feel real emotion from this animal. And that is one of the greatest gifts of my life. And that's why I think they're the greatest creature, because they're capable of expressing deep emotions. And how amazing is that to experience?
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, one of the things that really comes out of diving in, at least temporarily, to the Oscar's Place world is how, as you noted, how emotionally complex these animals are. A lot of times people wouldn't necessarily think that because there's so many unfortunate stereotypes floating around about donkeys that are missing the whole
point.
Right. And they really are emotional. And part of that, it sounds like there always has to be, not obviously mom and baby is one thing, but they always have to have at least, it seems like, one pal to kind of be healthy and feeling good generally. Is that correct?
That's right. Donkeys need donkeys. And we spend as much time focused on emotional rehabilitation and health as we do physical rehabilitation and health. And donkeys need donkeys, and they need their families. We only focus on doing what's right for the donkey. So she'll never be separated from her son. We don't wean here. Animals figure out weaning all on their own. You never see full-grown donkeys nursing from their mom. Like, they can do this without us. So we don't wean. We let them live their life. And we always keep families together.
That's great. That's tremendous. We're going to get to an email question in a moment, but meanwhile, I could be wrong, but my guess is that many people, including plenty of animal welfare folks, are just not conversant with how dark and awful the donkey trade is. Can you talk about that for a moment? Just describe some of the horrors that really go on well behind the scenes that most of us just would not be aware of or have any occasion to be aware of.
Yeah, I think what I'll share in our time about that is that the skin trade refers to the slaughtering of donkey for their hide, for a Chinese herb called yizhao. Which has all kinds of sort of non-proven theoretical benefits. No real science behind it. But it's extremely popular around the world, but it's extremely popular in China. And we're slaughtering 4 to 5 million donkeys a year to keep up with demand. So,
and it's all for that particular herb, basically?
It's all for that particular herb.
Wow.
And then it's illegal to slaughter equine in the U.S., which is good and bad. It's a slightly controversial opinion, but because you can't slaughter equine in the United States, they get sold at auction and then shipped to either Canada or Mexico, where they then get slaughtered. But we have no control over those conditions. And so I've seen the slaughtering of donkeys in Mexico, and it's horrible. And then they get purchased in Texas, shipped to Mexico, slaughtered, and then their hides get shipped to China. Mm-hmm. And so we are, and I only go to one auction, and I go there intentionally because that is the auction that has a contract with the slaughterhouse in Mexico. If I went to an auction in Colorado or in California, I'd just be outbidding people who could actually just want donkeys, and that doesn't feel like rescue to me. So I'm outbidding. I know who the kill pen buyers are, and they are the ones that I'm outbidding. So I know that Maisie was off to Mexico for slaughter when I got her with a baby in her belly.
If you hadn't intervened, you're saying, if you hadn't stepped in, that's the clear path that Maisie would be on.
For this particular donkey, yes.
And why that particular donkey?
Just because that's the kind of my point. Like, I went to Texas to know that I was outbidding the slaughterhouse, not humans who want donkeys. And so I know who was bidding on her. I know the exact person that was bidding on her.
Okay.
And they were a kill pen buyer.
So,
as is the case with almost every donkey at Oscar's Place, and there's several hundred here.
So given the sheer numbers that we're talking about, and the numbers are staggering, are you able to always kind of identify when you go to these places, like, well, I know that guy, and so I know he's got horrible things in mind, so I'm going to try to outbid.
That's right.
Anything he bids on, I'm going to try to outbid. And at a certain point, you probably run out of dough that's set aside for that day, right? You just do as much as you can.
That's exactly right. And, you know, rescues have a bad reputation. It's very easy to become a hoarder and bankrupt in the world of rescue. Because of that, because you can't save them all, and you have to draw lines. And the drawing of lines is one of the most difficult things that I do. But because I'm also a businessman, I manage a very tight and specific budget. And we do not overextend just because there are donkeys in need, because I want this organization to be here in 75 years. And so, you know, it's the hardest thing that I do is the Sophie's Choice decisions at auctions.
Yeah, like I can take this donkey, but I can't take this, and this donkey.
That's right.
So I just have to kind of walk away knowing that something unpleasant is likely to happen to the ones I just couldn't afford today.
That's right.
Wow. One of our emailers says, thank you for the great show today and interesting topic. I was curious, does your guest think that donkeys could get protections from slaughter like we have for horses?
Donkeys and horses are under the same legal protections. And again, it's illegal to slaughter them in the United States. I personally don't think that that does enough, because they're still getting slaughtered, but they're getting slaughtered in ways that are less humane and less under our control. It is illegal to slaughter donkeys in the US. So, you know, for those people that were fighting for that, job well done. And I do think it's important, but it doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah. One of our other emailers says, I saw a piece on him on Sunday morning, on a Sunday morning show a year ago, and I thought, how adorable, admirable. This is a really tiny print that an old guy like me is having trouble with, but thought how admirable he was and how loving he was with the donkeys. So that's a nice note.
Thank you. It's easy to do. They're amazing creatures, and this is my life's work, and this will be my legacy, and it's easy to come across as a donkey lover.
So tell me about some donkeys you've rescued, say, beyond the ones we've met so far today, Mom and Baby, that particularly touch your heart. I think it seems like they all kind of touch your heart from what I can observe, but are there some that just particularly grab you in a way that they haven't let go, regardless of what their status might be currently?
Yeah, and some of them are living and some of them aren't. I mean, Viejo is my personal donkey. I met Viejo on January 21st of 2021. He was the first larger scale rescue that we did. And he walked off a trailer in California at our location and walked right up to me and put his head in my chest. So he sort of chose me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is my donkey. And to this day, he's my donkey. And he's actually gained quite a bit of weight. And so we shipped him off to Fat Camp. Our second location, called Potter Valley, is a really great place for donkeys to lose weight. So Viejo went to Fat Camp for the summer and he lost 55 pounds. So job well done. And he is just he hugs you. He comes when you call him. He's just a loving, special creature. All of these babies are amazing. I think the moms are so special. I learn from donkeys every single day. And then we have donkeys who were in really bad shape when we got them. And we went as far as we could without causing more suffering. And we humanely said goodbye to. And all of those donkeys have left big marks on my heart. And we have a whole pasture of seniors. And so we're really focused on seniors and providing them all the special things that they need. We have an owner surrender program. So for people who need to get out of donkeys, we ask them to please bring their donkeys to us. And so oftentimes those are humans also in their final chapter. And so we're there for donkeys and the humans that love them. And we have a lot of old donkeys. And we hand shred their food and we warm their water. And they have special conditions to help prevent choke and laminitis. And we do a lot of work for the seniors.
Yeah. Some of those owner surrenders, back to the TV show, which we'll come into more specifically in just one moment. I just want to get caught up in a couple of emails too. But those are can't help really, but in most cases be super poignant because somebody has decided I just can't continue to care for my donkeys, either because of my own health or other circumstances.
That's right.
But it's great that they can, basically it looks like they can email you. If it's logistically practical, you'll go out and take a look and evaluate and often take the donkeys. And the great thing is they can visit when they get relocated.
That's right.
Probably takes the sting out of it because it's obviously emotionally tough for these folks. Not surprisingly.
That's right.
So another email says, I love donkeys too. I have some property and I'd like to rescue a couple of donkeys. Is there anywhere in Hillsborough or Pasco, that's in this neck of the woods run, as you probably know, where I can rescue? My name is Ann.
Hi, Ann. I don't know the answer. You're just going to have to rely on Google for that. But I encourage you to get a couple. I encourage you to set your boundaries because 2 turns into 12, turns into 21, turns into 50 very quickly. But I don't know specific places to rescue in other parts of the country.
So sort of in the realm of first-rate sanctuaries, which need to observe certain tenets, such as typically not adopting its animals out, Oscar's Place, as we've already touched on, is counterintuitive in a sense that an important objective is adopting out donkeys following very specific criteria. Can you explain the rationale for this and what that criteria is?
Sure. I mean, I want to help as many donkeys as possible. To do that, and to do that on budget and without becoming a hoarder means that donkeys need to leave us. And so the way that we can scale the amount of good that we can do is by finding homes. Now, if a donkey is unhealthy or unsocialized, we won't do it. But Maisie, she came with a daughter named Bailey. So Maisie and her daughter Bailey and her son Sherlock, as a 3-pack family, will be available for adoption once Sherlock is castrated, which will be at about 6 months. They are obviously, look at this girl, like they are so loving and so friendly and so healthy and so young. They will make the perfect family a really wonderful addition. And then when we do that, we have 3 spots that we can go fill from other rescue. We can rescue 3 more donkeys. So our adoption program allows us to scale. Otherwise, once you're at capacity, you're at capacity until a donkey dies. And so it was intentional from the very beginning to adopt out donkeys so that we could help more.
Right. And we should note that on Ron's end of the Zoom, the camera's on, and that's why we're getting to hear kind of running commentary because we're actually getting to see Maisie and Sherlock and the background, some more of the Oscar's Place area. So it's kind of cool. Okay, well, I think that explains that. So we've touched on the reality TV series Donkey King once or twice so far, starring you, Oscar's Place, and the donkeys who live there. I love the show. I learned a lot. I did get weepy a couple times. Like, I came screaming down the hallway. They had to euthanize Rosalie, and it's like I was super upset. But, I mean, it made sense, obviously, at the time, as it always does for an animal that's kind of either too ill or at the end of their life or both. But how did the series come together?
So when I launched Oscar's Place, I had never really done much for animals. I had never run a nonprofit. I had never met a donkey. I had never fundraised. It was all completely new for me. And also, I didn't have any farm-appropriate clothes. And so I had a lot of Gucci and Versace and Alexander McQueen. And I found myself rescuing donkeys. And so there's plenty of photos of me scooping poop and feeding donkeys in Alexander McQueen. And I think people thought that was really funny. And so I got quite a bit of press when I opened about what is this fashion guy doing with donkeys. And the photos were great. Out of that, David Begnaug from CBS came out and did a feature on me that aired on CBS. It was 8 minutes. And in that 8 minutes, I raised $200,000. And I realized people still watch TV, and that TV is a really excellent way to reach people who want to help. And so from that, I launched a strategy of a reality TV show. And it took me 3 years. It was not easy. It did not come easy. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. But, you know, in the world of animal welfare, what happens is you buy a list of people who make $75,000 plus and have two or more pets at home. Like, you identify who you think have an affinity to donate towards a pet cause, and then you bombard those people with direct mail and digital advertising. And I just didn't want to be that person. I just didn't want to be one of 26 pieces of mail you get each day asking for help. And so I thought, let me tell my story as loudly as possible and let anybody who wants to help come to me. It's this idea of being found versus finding donors. And so part of that has been all of my press. Part of that is this podcast. Like, your listeners who want to help, I welcome to come help. Your listeners who don't want to or are at capacity helping other organizations, I don't want them to feel any pressure. And so that's my press angle. So a lot of people, including Netflix, wanted Donkey King, but they wanted us to have sex with each other, drink a lot, and scream a lot. They want loud reality, because loud reality is what works, and that's not who we are. We are loving and authentic, and we have integrity, and we're donkeys first, and we're more sweet than we are loud. And so I really stuck to my guns about that. And eventually, through Monument TV, our production company, we got a deal with ABC. And I, you know, it's my goal to become the Ted Lasso of reality TV. I just want people to sit back and realize that they're going to feel, I get so much joy from the work that I do. And I want as many people as possible to have the honor of feeling that joy. And that's the point of the TV show. And so everything you see happened. We filmed over multiple years. It was all real and in real time. If we didn't capture it, we don't tell the story. And I'm thrilled. I don't think it's very common to start out on a TV project or a film project and in the end have it be exactly as you intended. And this is it. Donkey King is exactly what I wanted it to be. And, you know, we monitor the internet for feedback on Donkey King. And within the top three comments that we get is restoring faith in humanity. And what kind of a gift is it to be able to do that?
No, that's tremendous. And I'm not surprised, having seen the show, that there's a certain attitude to it. And again, you can learn a lot. If you think you know about donkeys, there's a lot more to learn about just how, again, emotionally attuned they are and what an ear twitch might mean and all kinds of other things in between. So, I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's currently airing or if it kind of completed its official season or.
Season one has completed, but we have the rights to the show. So you can go to donkeyking.com. And you can stream all 17 episodes. So they're all available at donkeyking.com right now.
That's great. Again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Ron King, co-founder of Oscar's Place Adoption Center and Sanctuary, which rescues, rehabilitates, and rehomes donkeys. As we're hearing, King has helped rescue nearly 500 donkeys and is the center of the reality TV series we just discussed called Donkey King. If you'd like to ask Ron a donkey question or, again, offer a donkey comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. We've talked a little bit about this, but just maybe to get a more complete picture, how is Oscar's Place funded?
So we are 100% donor funded, which means that every dollar that we spend came from people supporting us. And we find those people on social media or through the TV show. But we are a 501c3 with the U.S. government. We are a 4-star charity in Charity Navigator, and we're accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. And so we've done quite a bit of work to, because we're a new organization, so we've done quite a bit of work to prove that we're legitimate and that we're doing things at the highest standards. And people are just incredibly generous. And, you know, I would say the bulk of our supporters are on Social Security. And what that means is that they are giving us a relatively large portion of a limited income that they are diverting from themselves to help donkeys. And that just means the world to me. People are amazing. And we have a lot of amazing people helping us.
And in terms of being part of the Global Sanctuary, that organization, which again, I could be wrong, but I think one of their things, which I mentioned earlier when we were talking about adoption, is that you're not allowed really typically to adopt out animals. So were you able to get sort of an exemption given the nature and purpose of Oscar's Place, which is to kind of keep the animals moving in. So therefore adoption is a priority when otherwise it would be frowned.
Accredited by Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, it is a ridiculously complex process.
Yeah.
And including a site visit, and it's intense. I don't remember any specific conversations about not adopting.
Okay.
If I had them, perhaps it was addressed by the quality of people to which we adopt. And, you know, we say no to 85% of our applications that come in. But I don't remember that being an obstacle with them.
Okay, cool. So we're in our final moment, sadly, but one of the things we haven't talked about thus far, I alluded to it at the beginning of the show, though, was the first ever donkey hospital that you're planning to build. This sounds pretty specific for a role of a hospital. Fill me in on where it's to be located, what kind of conditions or ailments it's expected to treat most frequently, and how many donkeys the hospital can serve at any given moment.
Yeah, so one of the things, I hired a full-time on-site vet exactly a year ago named Dr. Kate Schoenholz. And one of the things that she pointed out is that I could be doing this better. So without knowing, just want to make sure nothing gets me that shouldn't get me. Without knowing, I was rescuing donkeys from an auction that were sick. And then I was putting them on a trailer and shipping them for 32 hours. And something called shipping fever was happening. So I was rescuing sick donkeys and they were getting sicker. I was rescuing healthy donkeys and they were getting sick on the ride. So fresh out of the auction and on a 32-hour trailer ride was not the best that I could do. And once she pointed that out, I decided to figure out how to be better. And that was a complicated and expensive search. And in the end, we found a property in Collinsville, Texas, which is just an hour from the auction, that was basically built out enough that with a couple months and some investment, we could turn it into a hospital. And so Dr. Kate Schoenholz came from Oregon State University. She has worked in and taught in equine hospitals or large animal veterinary hospitals. So she knew exactly what she was doing. And she went to work. And it was her that came to me and said I could do better. And it was her that's helping build it. And so just a couple weeks ago, it was with one of the greatest things I've felt in my life that we dedicated the hospital to her. And it is called the Dr. Kate Schoenholz Hospital. And it is the first and only donkey hospital in the United States. And we will get donkeys out of the auction. And within an hour, they will be under Dr. Kate Schoenholz's care to be diagnosed and treated. And then once they are fully healthy, they will come back into our pipeline. So then they will come up to California, where if they're an adoption candidate, they will be here in Hoplin, or if they want to be sanctuaried and they'd rather not ever mess with people, they'll go out to our location in Potter Valley. So we have a hospital. It opens September 5th. The first residents arrive on September 6th. And it will allow us to do more rescue and do more rescue better.
I guess you're pretty confident about the opening day since the first patients are coming in. Well, that's very cool. We're sort of nearing the end of our time here. We've been speaking with Ron King, again, co-founder of Oscar's Place Adoption Center and Sanctuary. As we touched on a few times, or as Ron did better than I did, it's oscarsplace.com to find out more about the whole situation. And
it's actually oscarsplace.org.
I should have known.
So just go to oscarsplace.org to learn about us, or it's donkeyking.com to watch the TV show.
Very cool. Now we're going to get a final goodbye bray from mom or baby or Probably not.
So as I learned filming years of TV, donkeys do not do what you ask them to. And so you're not going to get a bray, but you are looking at mom nursing or mom having breakfast and a knocked out baby right beside her. And I just don't think you're going to see a cuter, sweeter, more emotional or more meaningful image today than that. This exists because of the work that Oscar's Place does. And it's a perfect way to end a conversation about donkeys.
It absolutely is. Ron, thank you so much for making the time to join us today and bring your mom and cute baby and all the great work you've done and the great work you're going to continue to do. Really appreciate it. It was great chatting with you.
Thanks for having me, Duncan. Bye, everybody. I'm just going to hang up.
All right. Little technical snag. I wish I were as smart as a donkey to solve those kind of problems. In a moment, I'll speak with Rachel Lee Holstein, campaign's logistics organizer for PETA, and we'll talk about the Loomis Brothers Circus and their old unfortunate elephant, Oka, and it's wrapping up their engagement today with Florida State Fairgrounds. So get to that in a moment. Right now, I'm going to step into the comedy corner with a piece of animal corn-oriented comedy. This one is by Robert G. Lee, and it's entitled Dog and Cat in Today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking animals on WMNF.
When you have kids, you think you're going to change them and nurture them into something different. Good luck with that one. Because kids come out who they are. You can mold a little bit, but that's who they are. They are not changing one iota. It's like you are just there looking at the science experiment that will go wrong at some point. I figure it's like every single Boris Karloff monster movie where at some point you look at the wake of destruction left behind your creation and you go, what have I done? Everybody has different personalities. We got a dog and a cat. That's who they are. The cat came out first, intelligent, aloof, and just, Now she's a writer, she's an entrepreneur, very intelligent, but at the beginning it was ADD to the 10th power. It was like a laser focus that was never plugged in. It was just Now when she shows up, but growing up Our son is the dog. He's just this, oh, I love you. You are my parents. I will never disobey. I will always obey. If I do anything wrong, I will punish myself. Bad me. Bad dog. Bad dog. Bad dog. Where is the cat? Can I get the cat? I will get the cat. Where is the cat? I don't think I really understood God until I became a parent. And it's like, oh.
And there we go. There you have it. That was Robert G. Lee in today's Comedy Corner. The piece called Dog and Cat, taken from his album, I'm Sorry. Now it's time to speak with Rachel Lee Holstein of PETA, who will talk to us about the Loomis Brothers Circus and their unfortunate elephant, Oka, which is wrapping up the circus that is an engagement today at the Florida State Fairgrounds. So let's welcome Rachel Lee Holstein to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Rachel Lee.
Thank you so much for having me, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. Sorry, there's a bit of a delay. I got distracted by some donkeys that were on before, and I messed up some technical things, so it's all on me. But
no worries at all. Always love to hear more about donkeys.
Sure. So we touched on Loomis Brothers and Oka a few weeks ago on this show when they were making appearances, and there was protests, of course, of those appearances in Sarasota. So today, Loomis Brothers concludes a brief stand in Tampa at the Florida State Fairgrounds. So it seemed like a good time to revisit our concerns about Loomis and especially about their elephant Oka. So can you tell us a little bit about what the situation is and what the prospects are of getting them to retire Oka?
Of course. So Loomis Brothers is one of the last remaining circuses that still use elephants. And Oka is an elephant that was taken from her home and family in Asia as a baby over 5 decades ago and has been abused for circuses ever since. Oka has a handler named Brian Franson, and he has been caught violently hitting elephants with sharp steel-tipped bull hooks. Oka also is morbidly obese, which is likely due to the decades of confinement and chaining, and her body is breaking down under her own weight. So PETA is urging Oprah's handler, Brian Franzen, to retire her to a sanctuary before it's too late for her. And we're asking everyone listening in to help by never buying a ticket to the Loomis Brothers Circus or any other circus that uses animals.
Yeah, and also, Rachel Lee, as far as this particular instance goes, if I'm not mistaken, at one point not that long ago, I think, I'm not sure, I may have my history slightly not precise here, but it seemed like Loomis Brothers had two other elephants that also, like, performed and gave rides like Oka does that were removed from the circus. So do you know why they were removed and Oka continues to tour and perform?
That's a great question. And Brian Franzen did actually have two additional elephants that he supplied to different circuses, including Loomis Brothers. And these two elephants were retired years ago, but Oka was left behind and continues to endure this abuse. It's unclear to me why, but that has left her isolated, and elephants are very much herd animals. And that is just one of the many things that elephants and other animals in circuses endure. They are trained using physical violence and deprivation to make them fear the bull hooks, whips, and other weapons that are used to force them to perform these confusing and painful tricks. So it's never been clearer, though, that the public has turned away from circuses that exploit animals. And many people showing up to Loomis Brothers are shocked to find out that an elephant is still being used. We've had, you know, major victories like Ringling Brothers that returned without any animal acts, and instead only feature willing human performers that are dazzling and stunning with their death-defying acts.
Yeah, well, it also just seems like on the level of Oka's weight, because I think it's, I've seen it referred to as that she's morbidly obese. She's certainly super heavy, which a lot of strain on her joints and just all parts of her body. So it just seems like, again, she should stop traveling and performing. Is there anything besides obviously not buying a ticket? So we certainly want to be sure to do that and get the word out on that. But is there anything more direct in the form of a complaint or, you know, issuing our sort of displeasure with Oka still being in the circus that we could do?
Yes, we will be holding protests today at the Florida State Fairgrounds.
Okay, great.
Outside of the circus. So we'll be there today at 3:30 p.m. and at 6:30 p.m. So please come out and speak up for Oka. This will be in Tampa. And if you are not in Tampa and still want to help, you can visit.
Okay, I'm sorry, we got to run here, but thank you so much, Rachel Lee. This is Talking Animals.